The Office of Special Counsel recently found the Army had discriminated against a transgender civilian employee, Tamara Lusardi. Now, Lusardi was a quality assurance specialist, faced what OSC described as frequent, pervasive harassment on a daily basis for many months. The Army didn't admit to prohibited personnel practices, but it did agree to start diversity and sensitivity training. Larry Younger is a partner at the law firm Tully Rinke. He joins me now for this week's Legal Loop to discuss the implications of this case. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so clarify the issues for us. This was an OSC case for a civilian employee. Were they going on the legal basis, the president's recent executive order on transgender discrimination, or was there something more fundamental?
Well, you have at the heart of the matter, more fundamental, I think, is simply respecting the choices of individuals in the federal workplace. So specifically, there are Title VII protections against discrimination. The executive order, the July 2014 order signed by President Obama that amended two previous executive orders and expanded the scope of workplace protections for federal employees to not just protect against sex or national origin discrimination, but frankly, to extend that to sexual orientation, gender identity, or national origin. And that change then makes clear now for the federal workplace that transgender employees, and by transgender, it's very important to look at definitions and terms. Transgender individuals are people with a gender identity that is different from the sex assigned to them at birth. And as folks that are transgender are deciding to associate with the identity that they choose for themselves, that period of transition to that identity is often a trigger event in the federal workplace. And what's really important here, beyond the executive order, is the policy that's now going to change. And what we see in this particular case out of the Army, and I believe, in fact, the OSC has published some guidance about this, about the case involving Tamara Lusardi. And normally we would not use an individual's name, but she's allowed that, and it's come out publicly as a matter of record. And the Army was determined to engage in prohibited personnel practices. So what we see now is that that's a violation of Title V U.S. Code, and specifically Section 2302B10. So that is really what's at the heart of the matter, is five U.S. Code's protections, and we aren't allowed as a federal government to discriminate based on conduct that does not adversely affect your job performance, and now including sexual orientation and gender identity. And that's what OSC determined. It was that the Army in this particular case, by not allowing a transgender employee who is transitioning to the female gender to use a restroom appropriately, to and it was perhaps more pervasive when she kept being referred to in a masculine gender when the Army was trying to stifle communications with her, basically at the workplace. And her work performance as a quality assurance specialist civilian employee was not impacted at all by her gender. So that's where OSC was able to come down as an investigative agency and determine that this was a prohibited personnel practice. I will say, to the Army's credit, and the special counsel, Carolyn Lerner, noted that the Army, to their credit, did seek to right the wrongs of Ms. Lusardi, and they created a more welcoming environment for LGBT employees. And then Ms. Lerner also applauded Ms. Lusardi for standing up for her rights and the rights of all federal employees.
And further to clarify, does this have anything to do or to say to uniformed members of the military?
At this point, no, it doesn't. And there are a line of court cases. Perhaps one of the most famous is Parker versus Levy back in 1974, and then about a decade later, Goldman versus Weinberger, that recognize that the military is distinct. For the uniformed forces have a separate standard. It's not that you don't have freedom of speech, freedom of expression rights, but the Supreme Court gives extreme judicial deference, if you will. I think the exact language is judicial deference is at its apogee when legislative action under the congressional authority to raise and support armies and make rules and regulations for their governance is challenged. In this case, in the cases I've referred to, Parker versus Levy and Goldman versus Weinberger, uniform requirements, whether folks would wear certain religious apparel, there wasn't a requirement for religious accommodation at that time, and arguably the court came down and said, in one case, a religious headgear was not mandated by the military to be allowed because the Army or the Air Force or the Marine Corps and Navy have uniform regulation requirements. There's a professional judgment for having standardized uniforms. There's a distinction made there. That distinction perhaps might have broke down a little bit with the repeal of part of the Defense of Marriage Act, the Winter versus U.S. case from 2013, where the Supreme Court in a 5-4 vote recognized lawful marriages from states that allowed same-sex marriages and allowed
marriages
to inherit some property. So there's a distinction there for the military, realizing that the Supreme Court has recognized that. The Supreme Court would allow Congress to pass laws, but at this point, this policy, a more direct answer to your question, does not apply to military uniform personnel.
Okay, so only to on the civilian side, how might this case affect other components of the military that have a big civilian population?
I think it sets a precedent for the civilian for civilian employees across the federal workplace, not just in the Department of Defense, and it's probably really important for managers in the federal sector to go to the opm.gov website and perhaps to your website for a link and look at the diversity and inclusion reference materials. OPM has done a pretty good job of setting out what's primarily in policy right now for how managers will work with a transgender employee who is going through the transition phase. And that's where it starts to you look at how can we accommodate that employee as they transition as far as dress and appearance, as far as the use of their name and pronouns, you know, sanitation facilities. What about record keeping? What about rights to privacy? It's probably good to work with that, to go to the OPM website, discuss with the employee, their request for, this transition period and how they would like to proceed. As I read through the OPM website, it appears that that OPM is strongly encouraging support for the selected gender of a transgender employee at the beginning of the transition period, not at, in other words, not when either, not that there is a requirement for surgery, hormonal therapy, other things to take place.
Yeah, that was a question I wanted to ask you about. We're speaking with Larry Youngner. He's a partner at the law firm Tully Rinke. And there are physical changes that people undergo to become one gender from the one that they started out as. We understand that, hormone therapies and surgeries in some cases. But earlier you said it can be just the declaration that the person feels like they are the other gender. And that's understandable. But when it comes to something like a restroom, suppose there is a female person who believes that they are actually a male and they want to be identified as a male. But you still have what by all outward appearances is a female that wants – should that person be allowed to use the men's room? Because what about the reaction of everybody else in the work group that might be, that are males using it as males?
I think that is a great question. I think that's frankly one of the more challenging issues. OPM's guidance recognizes that you may have to accommodate the choice they recommend, first of all, that you allow the transitioning transgender employee to use the facility of their now stated, preferred sexual identity. So in your hypothetical, to allow, and they would start you referring to that female as he, as a recognition, so they would allow that transgender transitioning to male employee to use the male restroom. However, they realize that that may cause discomfort or awkwardness or just, create some tension, let's say, in the workplace for employees who aren't comfortable. The policy is not, hey, just get over it, but let's look at how you can accommodate that that employee. And I think the real standard, and perhaps it's the standard of review used in the EEOC and in other cases is one of the totality of the circumstances. In the instance involving Ms. Lusardi, I believe it was called an executive restroom, a private restroom was made available to her during the transitioning period. There's some interesting discussion in the OSC report that would be perhaps another good report for managers to take a look at. I believe that when the parties sit down with labor relations, management, and any representatives that might be required with, say, a bargaining unit federal employee, and talk about how they would like to proceed. If you can work this out in advance, you can probably avoid a prohibited personnel practice. On the other side, if I was management and did not want to allow that employee for reasons that might upset the workplace, then I want to be able – management should articulate very sound reasons and show how they've tried to come up with a reasonable temporary compromise. But at the end of the day, OPM has recognized that you can't discriminate against a transgender employee wanting to use that restroom.
Because you could even take it a step further. Some agencies have health facilities, healthcare facilities, and gyms and so forth, where you might have men's and ladies' locker facilities. And so that would even make the problem or the challenge, let's say, more pronounced.
And I think, as we've seen in other areas, it's a matter of society accepting a policy and determining how we should respond as a federal government. We have progressed where, frankly, to go back to our race relations history, separate but equal was determined to not be standard.
Sure.
And I think we will see over time a similar situation as we do, as we proceed now with transgender employees, with some acceptance. But that takes some time for policies to mature and for the public to become used to it. To borrow back to an analogy that we were discussing earlier, the military and the repeal of DOMA and the Don't Ask, Don't Tell provisions. I was an active duty officer at the time of that as a JAG in the military, and we discovered that it was pretty smooth as far as the acceptance. Folks were more focused in the military on doing the mission, and they really weren't as concerned about having to perform duty alongside somebody who happens to be, their sexual orientation just wasn't relevant. What was relevant was how well they did their job.
Sure.
Well,
so getting, I was going to say, getting back to the transgender issue, because we are running up the clock here, it sounds like something that federal managers should become acquainted with, the implications and the policies that exist for this, and start to be ready, because it sounds like more cases like this could occur.
It seems like they could, and we certainly – we're in the business of representing federal employees who want to make sure their rights are protected. And this is a prohibited personnel practice. The Lusardi case is really at the tip of the spear on this. And I would advise those in federal government and management to go to the OPM.gov website and take a look at the diversity and inclusion reference materials. It's a pretty good policy guideline for folks to follow, and it's hard to go wrong if you follow the guideline.
All right, something they can do right now. Larry Youngner is a partner at the law firm Tully Rinke. Thanks so much for joining me.
Tom, thank you.